Hey, welcome back to Passive Income Pilots, everyone. Tate Duryea here with the wonderful Ryan Gibson. What's up, Ryan?
Hey, Tate. Happy to see you in the studio today and happy to share our next guest who's been a friend of ours for many years and just an expert on real estate. Yep. Love it.
Last time I think we were together, we were skiing in Keystone with Rich and Kathy, and just wonderful all-around people, consummate real estate experts.
Yeah. What's interesting, I've actually been a personal listener of her show for the last decade. Called Real Estate News for Investors. And Kathy Fetke is someone who just delivers the news straight. It's like BBC News for real estate is what I like to joke around and say, if you just want to get a quick snippet of what's going on in the economy and how it impacts real estate, her podcast is amazing. But she's been just a beacon of knowledge in real estate and economics, emphasizing she's got a great media presence and she's got an excellent book called Retire Rich with Rentals. And she's been on things like CNN, CNBC, Fox News, NPR, CBS Market Watch, Wall Street Journal. She's on two podcasts that she hosts herself, and they're part of the Real Wealth Network. And you also find her, she's part of Bigger Pockets. They launched a podcast called On the Market, and she has several co-hosts on that. And she's also the past president of American Women in Radio and Television. So we're really excited to have another female on the show who is just an absolute leader in the space.
Definitely.
So with that, yeah, let's get into it.
Welcome to Passive Income Pilots, where pilots upgrade their money. This is the definitive source for personal finance and investment tactics for aviators. We interview world-renowned experts and share these lessons with the flying community. So if you're ready for practical knowledge and insights, let's roll.
Kathy, thank you so much for joining us today. Appreciate you having
me. So happy to be here, you guys.
Thanks. So I want to start by just saying I just got back from the Women in Aviation Conference. We've known each other for many years, introduced through Ryan. But just got back from Women in Aviation. It was amazing to see so many females in the industry. And this has been a very unintentionally male-dominated show so far. It's so great to have someone as powerful as you on the show, thought leader in the space, regardless of gender. And just wanted to give you a chance to introduce yourself, what you do, and maybe inspire some other women to take charge of finance and investing.
Thank you so much for that introduction. And I'm happy to be here representing the ladies. And I had that same awakening on my own show a few years ago, thinking, wow, I have not interviewed as many women as I want to. And I wondered why. Was it me? Was it them? And I came to realize it was both. But a lot of women just maybe lack the confidence in getting up in front of people and on stage. So that's something I want to bring to the world in my next, I don't know, my next career is actually with my past career. I used to do on-camera training when I owned a talent agency. So I was like, oh, maybe I'll do some of that, like really help women with their voice.
Can you talk about your background? You talked about your father being a dentist and his struggles and how you got to where you are today and what advice you might have first and foremost for other women that want to gain the confidence to control their own destiny financially. And then we can get into, you know, all the good stuff.
Yeah. So my dad actually was a high school dropout. He went into the military, fought in World War II. And what he got from the military was education. They ended up paying for him to finish high school and then college and then his dental degree. So he was really a turnaround story. He met my mom actually because she was a patient. So he likes to joke that she couldn't say no because he had his hands in her mouth if he asked her out. But over the years, I grew up with an ideal childhood with a beautiful family. And we all love each other. It was great. My dad and my mom both didn't come from money, so they didn't understand it, even though as a dentist, he was making money. And this is pretty common for professionals who are so busy with their own business. Obviously, your audience with pilots, doctors, dentists, these high-income working people who are so busy, they don't really have time to understand investments and what to do with their money. So they're relying on other people,
right?
So over the years, I would watch my dad make bad decisions. I hate to say it, but as a little girl, I'd hear him get excited about some deal he was doing with somebody he met at church. And I thought, don't do business with people at church or with friends. But he would tell me these ideas. And as just a young girl, I'd be like, that doesn't sound like it's going to work out. And it didn't. One was so sweet. He wanted to have a Christian coffee shop in Las Vegas. Dad, nobody's going to Las Vegas for coffee or for Christianity. But just, he didn't always know how to invest. Whereas my mom, we had a friend. I grew up in the Silicon Valley, and we had a friend who is now known as the godfather of the Silicon Valley, Ron Conway, who came to, was around the year 2000, and said, I've got this investment. I'm investing in this company that's going to make it easier to find things on the internet. And all of us were sitting in the living room going, oh, AOL's great. My mom's, well, we should do this. This sounds, anyway, it was Google. We were literally the angel investors in Google. They 10x their money. We're like, wow, we made so much money. We should sell it. Probably I would be a trust fund kid today if they hadn't done that. My mom always had a sense of things. And one of those was real estate. And my dad was just uncomfortable with it. So we never did. But that's what I always remember. And when I became of age where I could start investing, that's what I started pursuing.
That's great.
Ryan.
Kathy, it's been so nice getting to know you and Rich. And when Rich was on the show, I think 12 or 14 episodes ago, something like that. And he really shared a lot of the overall kind of mental health strategies and the balanced lifestyle. And through his book, The Wise Investor, we talked about that. So it was really fun to have him on. But you really have niched out a space in really talking about the real estate economy and or how the economy impacts real estate. You have a show, Real Estate News for Investors, which I've been a personal listener of that show for probably nearly a decade. I think it's been around for about a decade. And I love it because it gives people just a quick 10 to 15 minute, here's what's going on, here's what matters, trends in the industry that are really applicable to any type of real estate investing. But would you mind just giving us your thoughts on where we are in the real estate world right now in a couple of minutes, just where you think we're headed, where we are now for our listeners? Thank you.
Yeah, of course. I started that show because I do have a background in the news. I worked at ABC and CNN and Fox News back when news was news. There was no slant to it. But I started the show because once I became known in the real estate industry, I was asked to be on the news a lot. And I thought, I better know what's going on. So what better than having my own news show? I'd be on top of it. So there's a lot of confusion, and so many experts have been wrong and wrong over and over again for the past few years, because we've been through something that was really unprecedented, at least in our lifetime, to have the entire world just shut down. Incredible, right? Just an incredible moment of time that we maybe look back at, think we don't really ever want to do that again. But the world came to a stop. The world, it was amazing. And people couldn't work. They couldn't go to work. People couldn't there was no manufacturing. Things just came to a stop. And the Fed came in, the Federal Reserve came in and printed a whole lot of money and passed that out to people who couldn't work. So there were ramifications for the things that happened during the pandemic that we just haven't been through before. We just haven't been here before. So a lot of people have been wrong. But to sum it up, the best way I could sum it up is we've gotten really comfortable with this thing called printing money and just creating money. When I was young, I do remember my dad sitting around the dinner table, and there was a headline news. It was on the front page of the newspaper. Remember those newspapers? It's like he's looking at the newspaper, and there was a picture of like literally a printing machine, and they printed a few billion dollars, and the world was just like in shock. Like, how could they do this? And my dad said, boy, if they keep doing this, you're going to see inflation. And because they're printing money, and yet they're not you can't print goods, right? You can't print things. Well, now I guess you can, 3D printing. But money, if you can print it, it becomes less valuable, and that can create inflation. And I remember him looking around the table and saying, this is the last generation that's going to be able to have one person working, because pretty soon both spouses are going to need to work. And then the kids are going to need to work because of this. It's just, again, we're in a place where we haven't really been in prior generations, at least in our history, where you could just create so much money. But during the pandemic, at a time when nobody could work, but people still needed to live and feed themselves and pay for housing, those printing machines went nuts. There's not a lot of discussion about this publicly, but the amount of money that was created in 18 months is the amount of money that was in circulation in 2007. So imagine that. All of the money trading is what was created. We created a whole new economy in that 18 months. So it shouldn't have surprised anybody that we would see inflation. And on top of that, people couldn't work and produce things. So you've got all this money circulating, but not the goods that people wanted. And of course, one example is the toilet paper. We couldn't get toilet paper and people were freaking out.
Yeah.
But on our development projects, we couldn't get wood. We couldn't get anything. We couldn't get even things that we took for granted, like appliances. We had to get vans and drive to other states just to find the things that we needed. And you pay whatever you had to get those things. You guys know,
yeah.
Right?
Oh, yeah.
It was a tough time. That, again, is another unprecedented thing. And you couldn't create housing. That's why housing prices continued to rise. You had $7 trillion floating around and money being handed to people. And the PPP loans were massive. There were people that got millions. And that went somewhere, right? Oftentimes it went into real estate. Very often, a lot of it went into real estate and obviously stocks. So the hangover is where we are right now. Of all that money and the Federal Reserve trying to pull that back out of the system. Somehow they were shocked. I'm not an economist. I just study it like crazy because I don't want to be taken off guard. So to me, it seemed like the most obvious thing in the world that we'd see inflation, yet the chairman of the Federal Reserve was taken aback. He didn't know. So that's what we've been dealing with for the last couple of years is the after effect and the quick raising of rates. People are really shocked that the speed in which interest rates changed didn't send the economy into a recession. If we talked to anyone a year ago or 2 years ago, they would have said with all certainty by 2023 and definitely 2024, we were going to be in a pretty bad recession because of the interest rate hikes. It's like driving a fast car and slamming on the brakes. You can drive a fast car and slow it down gently and nobody gets hurt. But you slam on the brakes, someone might get hurt. And that's what it felt like to the economy. And yet here we are with still a really strong GDP, really strong job growth. We're definitely not in a recession. And in fact, the Fed has stopped raising rates. At least they said they have. Inflation is a bit more under control, but not where they want it to be. So people are just mind blown by it. But if you really just step back and say, hey, we dumped a ton of money into the system, that money is still circulating. And a lot of people just bought things with cash. And you're not in distress when you buy things with cash, when you buy housing with cash or investment. If you have so much money for investment, it's pretty hard to create a recession under that environment. So that's my take.
Kathy, that was really well stated. The follow-up question to that is, people say that we have a really resilient economy here in the United States, despite everything we've gone through and the interest rates and the job reports. And man, we've got a really resilient economy. How much of that is just the leftovers of the money supply that was pumped in during COVID? And how much of that is a really resilient economy? Or maybe the two go hand in hand.
I'm not an economist, but I would say it's 100% because of the money.
Economies
grow when there's money to invest with. When you can borrow money cheaply, like we were able to for so many years, you can invest in a whole lot of things and you can create jobs that way because you're creating businesses. When that comes to a stop and rates go from, well, like the overnight lending rate went from nearly zero, so you could borrow money for almost nothing, and suddenly up to what is it now? Almost, oh my gosh,
5.5,
whether it's
something like that,
4.5,
yeah. Something like that,
it's over 5. Yeah.
It's high.
Yeah. 5.25. Yeah. Whatever it is today, it is much, much higher than it was. And that is an exercise in the Federal Reserve trying to pull that money back out. Because if money's too expensive to borrow, then banks can't create it. They don't create it. That's part of the money printing that the U.S. does is, let's say you want to go buy a car and it's $50,000 to buy that car at a 1% interest rate and the payment's $500 a month, you're going to buy that car. And all of a sudden that $50,000 is created out of thin air. That's how our system works. Now, double that. Now, the rate has gone up and your payment is $1,000 or $1,200. Maybe you're not going to buy that car and that money's not created. So that's part of the process of just pulling some of the $7 trillion out of the system, which when you look at the money supply, all you have to do is go to Fred. It's the Federal Reserve of St. Louis. Type in Fred and the M2 money supply and you'll see it goes and it's trying to come down, but it's not, hasn't come very far yet.
And we'll put
that money still circulating.
We'll put the Fred website in the show notes because that's a critical resource.
Great investors. So I think that this is a really important point, Kathy, that a lot of people miss because the last recession that any of us remember was the Great Recession. So everybody goes, I'm waiting for asset prices to drop. And I think that it's so important to understand this because in the Great Recession, we didn't even start QE, which is quantitative easing, which is printing money, until, what was it, 2012? Is that right? They didn't turn on the printing presses to start injecting capital into the system until, I believe it was 2012. So we went through years of letting the economy languish because we weren't in the habit of just injecting money into the system. And this time around, we inject, and I think over the entire, and don't quote me on this, but I think it was something like $2 trillion or $1.5 trillion in the Great Recession. And we injected, what, $7 trillion this time around? It's just, it's created this new paradox where it's, you just can't compare. When people say, oh, there's a recession coming, they automatically assume, okay, then the same thing is going to happen that happened in 2008, where there was, nobody had any equity in their properties back in 2008. Now we have people with tons of equity in their real estate assets. So the fundamentals are very healthy in real assets. And then also we've just injected so much money that there really is no way to compare the two. So we truly are in uncharted territory.
Yeah, I love to talk about the comparison of 2008 to today because there people are still, they have wounds, right? From that. People who went through that don't want to ever go through that again. That was a terrifying time. I actually think that the quantitative easing started in 2008 because they had to. That's when Lehman Brothers collapsed and they were sitting in Congress going, we don't know what to do. Our economy is about to fail. So they had to come in with the heavy lifting there. And then that's when it became like, oh, we could do this again.
Right.
And they haven't really stopped since then. But you cannot compare the housing market of then to now. It couldn't be more different. And anyone sitting around thinking there's going to be a housing crash just doesn't know the fundamentals. And I'm happy to share that with you if you want the difference.
That's fantastic. I would love to hear that because I think that's a common misconception where people are sitting around waiting for interest rates to come down or waiting for a housing bubble to burst when they might just be waiting forever. So yeah, let's dive into it.
They will be waiting forever. And there's people with this NAR lawsuit thinking that's going to have prices come down. It's just, that's not economics. That's not how it works. So back in 2005, I was a mortgage broker and I saw what was happening. And I could give what's called a NINA loan, which is a no income, no asset loan. I didn't need to know anything about you. You could say, I want this house. And I would say, great, here's an application. You'd fill it out and I'd turn it into the bank and you'd get the loan. It was really that easy. Even if your credit was crappy, even if you'd never paid your bills and you had no history of paying bills. So it was a credit boom. And it came from this idea that everyone should be able to own a home. And of course, that would be wonderful if everyone could own a home, but not everyone's in a position to own a home. You have to be able to qualify for that. You have to be able to pay for that. And then also back then, it's so hard to believe that this was even a thing, but you were qualified on a teaser rate. So to give you an example, a woman came to me and she made $2,000 a month and she wanted to buy a house that would normally have a payment of about $2,500 a month. So there's obviously no way this woman could afford it. But they would qualify on a teaser, like a portion of what the payment would be. I don't know why. I remember looking at this woman saying, this is going to adjust in a few years and you're not going to be able to make this payment. You're going to lose this house. And she's like, if you're not going to give me the loan, I'll go to the loan officer next door who will. And so I didn't. I couldn't because I knew that she'd lose the house once that payment adjusted to what it should be. But these are the kind of loans. Now, I want you to know that I could have made $9,000 from that paperwork.
Wow.
Because you could add on 3% as the loan broker without the client even knowing. So we were super incentivized to commit fraud. That's all I can say. I even turned in a loan application where the bank came back and said, this person doesn't qualify. And I said, oh, I'm sorry. I'll let them know. And then oh, the banker said, we just changed their income. They qualify now. Like, you can do that? And I came home to Rich and said, does this sound okay? And he goes, no, honey, that sounds like fraud. Do not put your name on that loan. But this is the kind of thing that was happening. Now, in 2012, that all changed with Dodd-Frank, where now you have to, it's harder to get a loan than it's ever been. You got to open up everything. They want to know everything about you. Back then, we didn't have to know anything about you. So the difference in the people who own homes today is it was open book. They had to absolutely qualify for the payment. They had to put a down payment down. They have had prices go up since then, so they have enormous equity. Most of these people today are on fixed rate mortgages. Back then, it was all adjustable. So as soon as those loans adjusted, they couldn't pay it. And the people today have the highest FICO scores in history, the best credit ever. So let me repeat that. The difference today, good credit, down payments, tons of equity, and fixed payments. And again, if you type in Fred, Federal Reserve, and the income, the mortgage payment to income,
yes,
you will see that today homeowners have the lowest payment than ever in history compared to their income, because in this time their wages have gone up. So the only time you can have a housing crash is if there's distress. But when you have homeowners who have the lowest payment in history and it's fixed while their wages are going up, where's the distress? Might be 2021, 2022, people who bought then and paid at the peak. And then interest rates went up. But remember, those people are on fixed rates and prices continue to go up. So they have equity. They're not upside down. So again, in 2008, it was people who couldn't qualify, couldn't make the payment, had bad credit, a history of not paying their bills, and on adjustable rates. So there's absolutely no comparison from then and now.
I think it's worth pointing out too, like, recessions are not playbooks, right? Like, it's not like, oh, we're having a recession. Let's get the playbook out and let's read what happened last time. And then this is what's going to happen this time. And then you do these things. And recessions also don't last forever. So like, every recession is going to be different. And so we have different things, right? So something else is going to break this time around. It, like, there's going to be a recession at some
point. Like office.
Exactly.
Office right now is breaking. Some things are breaking, and some banks will be breaking. But they're not the big banks. And the Fed's learned how to fix all that. So again, one more thing in the housing market, because that is my specialty. That's what we do at Real Wealth, is help investors buy investment properties. So I have to know this stuff. The other thing is supply and demand. If you go back to 2007, it was the Gen X generation that was at first-time home buying age. And when you look at demographics, that's the smallest generation. There was a dip there. There was the baby boomers, then a dip. And now the millennials, who are the baby boomers' kids. You got this huge generation that had kids. That's the millennials. Guess what? The biggest group of them is at first-time home buying age. And yet over the past 10 years, builders have not kept up with demand. So now you've got, again, totally opposite situation, massive group of millennials looking for homes. The supply is not there for them. And the people who own those homes are not giving them up because they have 2%, 3% interest rate. And many are paid off because you've got all these baby boomers who paid it off over 30 years and they're retired now. So it's a stuck market. And again, this is why we continue. That's why I have a single family rental fund, because there's a need. There's a desperate need for more housing. That's why we're in the single family development business, because there's a need. This is why Warren Buffett invested just recently, I forget how much, it's a lot of money into builder stocks.
Yeah.
And Warren Buffett wouldn't do that if he thought there was going to be a housing crash coming. It's the opposite. There's housing that's needed.
Now, let's talk about seeing around the corner. Like you mentioned office. We want to try to give practical knowledge and insights for how pilots can take action against their portfolio and where to position. And I think you articulated where we are with the residential market very well. So let's talk about maybe what cracks in the economy do you see, and how does that kind of impact what people should do to position themselves for success now? Because as we know, a lot of people that shouldn't have bought homes were buying homes. But when that crashed, it impacted like the entire economy, right? So I think we should be aware of maybe where the cracks are and how to best position around it. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, the big cracks, like you said, are properties and companies and people who borrowed money at a low interest rate and didn't expect that interest rate to go up. That's, no one did. Some people might have expected it in retrospect. And of course, hindsight is
22.
Always, you're always too late. It makes sense. Of course, we weren't going to stay at pandemic level rates forever. The whole point of lowering rates was to stimulate the economy during a difficult time. And then when things, you know, came back to normal somewhat, then rates went up. And we're really at normal rates. There's absolutely nothing wrong with the rates that we're at right now. It's just such a shock from where we were. But so anyone on an adjustable rate who wasn't thinking that was going to change and that they were going to go up so much, they're in trouble. And add to it with office buildings that they were trading at very expensive levels at a time when all of a sudden a pandemic hits and all of a sudden companies learn what we've known for a long time. We've been a remote company for 12 years at Real Wealth. Rich and I wanted to move to Southern California and we left our office and then the rest of our employees like, hey, if you're going to go live where you want, we want to live where we want. Okay, we think we can do this. So we learned how to be a remote company 12 years ago. During the pandemic, everyone else learned it too, even schools, right? Everyone was remote. So companies learned, gosh, I can hire anyone. I can hire anyone from anywhere. I have a much larger pool. And then more softwares have become available to help manage this. Like, how do you manage a team remotely? And so that's what we're seeing. Of course, this all happens at a time when office is having a tough time anyway with the interest rate change. Now, all of a sudden, nobody wants to be in an office, and certainly downtown. So this really affects those big downtown buildings. And it's going to affect everything around it. Because if you don't have all those people going in downtown, they're not going to go get that coffee on the corner market. They're not going to go get that sandwich at lunch, right? So all the downtowns are going to feel this office crunch more than, say, the suburbs, where you still need to get your hair done and your nails done and get your massage. And there's things you can't do remotely. So suburban office seems to be doing fine. Surprisingly, retail seems to be doing fine. You'd think that more and more people would just want to buy stuff online, but retail seems to be okay. Again, because all that money is circulating still, $7 trillion, people like to spend it. Storage, you've got people in a situation where, you guys know this better than anybody, but they have to downsize maybe because life is more expensive, because apartments are more expensive. It seems to me that this would be a time that storage would be a popular thing. And then industrial, of course, is still rolling along. So that's my summary of, of it. But either way, if you, any commercial projects, usually commercial loans are adjustable. If you're on a more fixed one, that's great. But it could mean that as these payments adjust on commercial properties, that investors or owners will have to put more capital into those projects because the banks are going to want to make sure that there's enough coverage there.
Just as a review for anyone, when you hear commercial real estate, a lot of people think office. Just for anybody that's just tuning into the show, commercial real estate encompasses multifamily, office, storage, retail, mobile home parks, and again, multifamily as well, because some people think big apartment complexes, that does fall under the umbrella of commercial real estate. So just to clarify.
Kathy, you are a wizard and a maestro of all this stuff, right? You're very sophisticated. You've seen a lot. You help people buy single family homes. You've done syndications and very extensive developments. You've had some massive wins boiling this down, but you're also very good at educating someone who's just getting started. Right. And reflecting on a quote that you said, which is investing in real estate can change your life. That was something that you said. And when you think about a demanding career that an airline pilot has, how can they make their first step into getting into real estate? Particular strategies or markets or things that they should consider starting with?
I love this question. And one of the things, I'll start with things that you should not do, because hopefully that will help. I'd mentioned before the show to you guys that I was a keynote speaker at a doctor's conference, and they were following a guru. And this is what we've seen over the last few years, is a lot of people coming out of nowhere, using social media to become instantly famous. And they sound like they know what they're talking about. So this is a, was a room of really just brilliant doctors who have massive debt, right? And they are, they devoted their lives to this career. And yet they were trying to do something that they didn't know and put all the money that they made in the career that they do know and that they studied for and they worked hard for, and all of a sudden being so reckless with that money on something they didn't understand and couldn't possibly understand in such a short period of time. Think about what it takes to be a pilot or a doctor or a dentist or a professional athlete. This was not overnight. It's taken blood, sweat, and tears, right? And then it's so easy to just give it away. I'm pretty sure that a lot of the doctors at that event invested in people who just didn't have the experience. And now with rates going on, I think a lot are hurting right now. So the biggest thing is don't get swept into these gurus, so to speak, that don't have the track record and the experience. If you're going to hand your money over to someone, make sure they have a track record, that they've done what they say they're going to do. And believe me, I'm saying this because I've made that mistake. Even I have invested with people who had experience, but not specifically in the thing we were trying to do. And I'll give you an example. This, my attorney actually told me to invest. He's, oh, this is the best thing I've ever seen. It's a wine village in Northern California. And you could be able to, people are going to stop in and want to taste the wines from California. And the wine cellars are going to be able to have, they're going to pay a commercial price for this little tasting room. So you're going to get a higher per square foot rent. So it made sense. Oh yeah, instead of having to drive all around the mountains of California, you go to one place and you taste the wine and all these wine cellars will. Anyway, bottom line, too sexy, too new, too hard, too different. We lost our money 100% in that deal because this guy had never done it before. Were there some successful wine villages? Yes. Had he done successful projects? Yes. But we were the guinea pigs on this one. So don't be a guinea pig. That's the moral of the story. You look at someone like, you guys, you do one thing, right? I do one thing. I wasn't before, but we either have single family rentals or we build that single family communities. That's what we do. And you guys, you know, you focus too. And so just, again, be careful about that. And don't try, this would be, again, be my, if you're a pilot and you're making a lot of money and you're successful and you love your career, don't try to also be an expert in real estate. It's not a side business. It's a business and it needs to be treated like a business. So you can't just dabble in it, in my opinion. So if you're busy working lots of hours and you still have family and health and other things, vacations, things you need to do, then invest your money in somebody who is treating it like a business and has a tracker.
Yeah. And I'll say from personal experience, like it took me 10 years to get to where I'm at. And that was on my layovers. I didn't go out. I was a slam clicker, as all airline pilots know. And then I went and grinded on my business and I did it on my days off. And it was extremely stressful. Like it was a lot of work. It wasn't something I just did on my days off. It was something that it took a lot of time to get it to where it is today. And I know, and it takes a special person. Tate, I know, is grinding away too. And it's not just something you just go, oh yeah, I'm going to do this thing. A lot of people would always, at least Tate, I'm sure you get this all the time. They would make excuses as to why I could do it and they couldn't do it. But at the end of the day, the difference was the grind, the grit, the time spent. It takes a special personality and drive to be active. So I'm glad you said that, Kathy, because that's very relatable to me. And where a lot of people.
And I also want to pull on the thread that it's boring. Real estate is not an exciting investment category. It is tried and true. It's got the best track record of any, and that's why we love it. We try not to be biased on this show. We want to bring in every asset class we can possibly find. But at the end of the day, real estate has such an amazing track record, but it's because it's very boring. It moves like a cruise ship. It's not going to get your heart rate up like cryptocurrency. It's not going to get you rich overnight, but it's tried and true. And it should be boring. If you're investing in a real estate project that's exciting, it's probably not the safest bet.
Yeah. And again, I made that mistake. We've got a resort in Costa Rica. We've got like all these really sexy projects, but they've been hard.
By the way, you dove into that with me on a webinar that we did. I don't know if you remember, it was like 3 years ago. We'll put that in the show notes where I actually go through five deals that Kathy's done and some of the successes and some of the less successes and how to do due diligence on an operator. Kathy and I recorded a webinar on that, so we'll put that in the show notes. It was really good. It was like an hour and a half long. I don't know if you remember that, Kathy, but
I did. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. Yeah. We are so strict in our underwriting now, but back then I would get swept into these exciting ideas and I held myself back on a surf. Those
town. Oh, like a wave pool.
Town wave pool. Yeah, yeah. We almost did that. I just looked at Rich and said, no, we can't do anything new or different or sexy ever again. We're just doing the basics. But that's to me, real estate is sexy, even though it's boring and it's exciting. I was sitting down with some friends who were financial planners, and they wanted to look at what we were doing and why we were so heavily invested in real estate versus the stock market. And they put us on what their plan would be. And the typical plan is to save in taxes by getting an IRA or a 401k and then investing that. And then in 20 years or 30 years, you're forced to take that money out and then you pay tax. So you're not avoiding taxes. You are just putting them off. And so when he showed me this, it was like in 20 years, the amount of money we would have would be so much that when we're taking it out, we're getting you're not making less in the future. I hope you're not making less in the future because there's inflation and your expenses are going to go up and everything's going up. I kind of wonder if you're going to be paying more by putting it off in the future. And that's, again, just looking at this financial plan they gave me, I was like, yeah, but in real estate, we never have to pay the taxes. I like that a lot better because we can defer. And if your audience doesn't know this, they need to know that in real estate, you can take tax deductions and depreciate your property, even if it's appreciating. And then when you pass away, those properties step up, at least current tax law, to the current market value of the time. And those taxes that you didn't pay, that you deferred, go away through the 1031 exchange. So I can't find another investment that does that. That maybe oil, there's other ones I should look in, but I'm like I said, I'm just going to focus on what I know. But that just makes sense. And then he said, and I don't mean to harp on any financial planners because I know you're doing good work and what we do isn't for everybody. But one thing he said is, hey, do you want to set aside some money for your grandkids for their college? And I thought, so there's this plan you can do for that. I said, no, I'd probably just rather buy a house and just have that house pay rent and the renter pays my loan off and that house will pay for their college because then I don't have to sell the house. I just refinance and get the money, pay college, for college.
So they still have it.
Exactly.
That's a college education in itself. And by the way,
talked about this on the college planning episode. Go ahead, Ryan.
No, I was going to say, and if you want more information about 1031 exchanges, we just recorded Kyle Williams from Velocity 1031 on episode 52. So Kathy mentioned that sort of in passing, but the whole concept of 1031s was covered in episode 52 really well. Kathy, you had a really challenging personal situation. And I believe Rich shared that story with our listeners. And if you want to listen to that, Rich Vetke on previous episode talked about that. But you went through some really challenging personal times at the end of the day, but you still found success in real estate during that time, emerging from that really challenging situation. What advice would you have to our listeners or those pilots that feel like they have current financial or time constraints, personal situations that make investing feel so out of reach? What would be your advice?
I am a firm believer that we are here on earth to evolve. Believe that every challenge we get is here to make us better and to have us see something we wouldn't see otherwise. For me, that challenge was the love of my life was told that he had 6 months to live when they discovered melanoma, skin cancer. He is fine today and the doctor was wrong, but this was a shock, obviously a complete shock. We had two young children. Again, he's fine. What that did for me is have me say, he had gifted me this ability to be a stay-at-home mom and I didn't want to leave my small children to go find a job 9 to 5 or 8 to 6 or whatever it would be to take care of the family in the case the doctor was right. I thought there's got to be a way to make money passively. And I had heard about it. I didn't know much about it. I read Rich Dad, Poor Dad, but it just forced me to go on this journey of understanding what is this thing. So that was the turning point for me. And I dove in, and I happened to, as I said, I was in broadcasting. I had a radio show in San Francisco, and I just made that show. All of a sudden, I just pivoted to, what is this thing? And I started interviewing millionaires who were self-made millionaires who had achieved passive income. And every single episode, I'd be like, what? You're kidding me. You could, what? That's what I just told you. You could buy a property, it triples in value, and you don't have to pay capital gains tax when you sell it as long as you buy another one. Like, that was mind-blowing. You can get your credit fixed. You could borrow money. Some at the time, it was like 100% that you could borrow. But you can still, to boil it down, challenge gives us the opportunity to really look, or sometimes you're forced to look at something you would never look at otherwise. And oftentimes it determines your future when you do that. So take the time to really look at, what is this challenge? What is it trying to teach me? And what are the steps I can take?
One of the first, I just read a book on managing change. I think it was Cotter is the last name, like managing through change. And the first step in, is an 8-step process in managing change. And you went through change, right? You had that, you were faced with this 6-month to live change. My life is about to very drastically change, where my spouse is working and providing all the income. Sound familiar? That's a pilot. And that person is about to lose their income, and then it's going to rely on the spouse that's at home. And so that was the change. And so the thing that you did was you acted with a sense of urgency, out of necessity. But that's the first step in managing through change, is acting through urgency. And so if you're listening to this and you're a pilot or a captain and you're the sole provider for your family, I want you to ask yourself, if you lost your medical on the next 6-month appointment, what would you do? Because every 6 months we run the roulette of losing our medical. And you're going to, do you want 6 months or a couple of months to act with urgency, or do you want to act with urgency now? So, you know, one of the best pieces of advice I've got from an American Airlines captain, when I was first starting my career, I was 20 years old, wandering around airports. I had my CFI and I was doing the thing, and I would just go up to random pilots, and it was weird, and just say, hey, do you mind if I pick your brain for a couple of seconds? And I said, hey, what advice would you give to a 20-year-old like myself? And one guy told me, he said, you better have a lot of irons in the fire, because the economy and a furlough and changes in bases and your medical can ruin this career in a second. In the turn of a dime, you could have nothing. And it hit me hard when I went to my second regional after being furloughed in 6 months. I went my first airline. It was like, oh, we're going to be a captain in no time at all. And next thing, orders were canceled. Airline was bankrupt and I was furloughed. I went to my next airline and I walked in the door, and there was a 59-year-old in there who had just been at the same airline for 20 years, number 5 guy, kids in private school, laid off in the same class as me at a regional, making 20 grand a year. So guys, this is, and gals, this is real, right? What happened to Kathy can happen to you. So that's why we have this show, right? When we don't want to steer you in any particular direction, just give the bandwidth to thinking about how you can take action and what that might be. And this is a great first step. So thanks for sharing that, Kathy. But another question I had, really, like, pilots are gone, right? They're on the road. What kind of real estate investments would you recommend that require minimal day-to-day oversight?
Yeah, that's what we specialize in at Real Wealth, because I'm from San Francisco Bay Area, where most of our early members at Real Wealth were tech workers. And they have a very high salary, but they work 80 hours a week. And they oftentimes own properties in the San Francisco Bay Area that were negative cash flow. So it was really easy for me to help them to say, you have a property worth $1 million is bringing in $2,000 a month. This is not great. You could 1031 exchange it into something far better that is professionally managed, that is newer, and has much higher cash flow. So that is one of the things that we've helped a lot of people in that situation, where they're just too busy and all over the place. Not people travel internationally. I'm sure you guys do. So owning properties that cash flow, that are newer, that are professionally managed. That's what you got to do. Don't try to self-manage. Don't try to fix and flip. Don't listen to any of that stuff. You cannot fix and flip. You can't do burr. You can't do the, you don't need to. There's a lot of real estate that's for people with no money. And you need to be looking at the stuff for people with money and understanding that. So the asset protection, the tax benefits, it's a very different investment. So you could just cut out all of those books. on flipping, on development, anything hands-on, you don't have time for. Yeah.
And you're going
to speak to me, Kathy, because I've done it.
I've done it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've done Burr deals 6 time zones away and trying to manage contractors from
how'd
six...
it go? I can't imagine.
I still own it. I haven't made much money on it, but it was a real headache and it still is. This is why I transitioned to passive investing 6, 7 years ago now. I went to a real estate conference and met some syndicators and was like, wait a minute, you mean I can just pass off the day to someone else and
you're going to operate, you're going to find it, operate it.
Yeah. Do all the work, all the heavy lifting. You're a professional that does this day in and day out, just like an airline pilot. And I keep 70 or 80% of the profits. Yeah, this is a no-brainer. So I've come a 100%. And we did buy a physical property last year, but it was brand new build. And I think that is such good advice because it's such a good way to frame it. There are tons of real estate deals for people with no money. And if you don't have any money, then yeah, you need to be rolling up your sleeves and getting your hands dirty and then maybe swinging a few hammers. But if you're an airline pilot, you don't need to be doing that. You shouldn't be doing that. It's not the best use of your time. We talk about that all the time, Ryan and I, about pick up a green slip or a double time, a premium trip.
Exactly.
For time and a half or double time. That is so much better, so much of a better use of your time than trying to learn how to tile a bathroom.
Unless you love it. Unless you love it.
Yeah, itch to have a house in every layover. And oh my, I think I got to house 3 and I was like, nope, not doing this anymore.
Kathy, I got a question for you. So we have a wide range of experience levels in our listener group, but for the people that are just getting into this, trying to understand real estate on a more holistic level, you probably have a bunch of great resources for those people. Can you recommend for somebody who's got a little bit of a feeling of overwhelm, what are some resources that they can dig into to better understand real estate from a holistic perspective so that they feel more confident and comfortable getting into it?
Well, that is why I created realwealth.com to offer this information. Like, my passion is increasing financial intelligence, especially when it comes to real estate. So we have over 500 webinars. I think that still could be overwhelming, but we have lots of free webinars and articles and blogs to help. I also wrote Retire Rich with Rentals to really simplify the process of investing in passive 1-4 unit homes, where how to find the market, how to, again, make it very turnkey and passive for you. And buying newer is one of the ways, because you buy an old house, well, it is not passive. Even a new house isn't passive. We're in a fairly new house and I feel like everything's breaking, but just wait.
Kathy's husband is named Rich. So Retire Rich with Rentals, the comma in there is critical, right? You're just trying to...
He picked that title and I thought, wait a minute, what about me? But yeah, Retire Rich with Rentals is a very simplified version of how to invest in 1-4 unit homes. And that's, to me, is still a great, great thing to do. It's pretty passive, not 100%, absolutely, but you can get up to 10 Fannie Freddie loans, fixed rate loans, stays fixed. Your loan stays fixed while your rents go up over time. And if you're in growth markets, that's what we specialize in, is getting in front of where the growth is, so that you just buy this thing, your property manager manages it for you. And if it's in the right place, it's going to go up in value over time while your tenant's paying down your loan and while you're getting these tax benefits. I love that. And then with syndications, I think it's what we talked about, just making sure that whoever you're handing your money over to, whoever that is a professional company, that they're not just a couple of people that want to do their first deal with you. That you can do that if you want, and it might turn out
student pilot deals, right?
Yeah. You're going to fly. Are you going to fly with a student pilot? Hopefully you can, as long as there's a senior pilot next to them, right?
They may have a great Instagram thing that shows them flying Cessnas, but they're not really experienced. Yeah. And Kathy is underselling, I think, the opportunity to buy 1-4 units. She's not saying go find a random house and search forever and try to figure it out on your own. Kathy has a really well-worn playbook on going into markets that are trending in the right direction, handpicking those markets, and finding somebody who has operated over 300 or 400, I don't know what your minimum is, but like hundreds of homes, partnering with that person who has a well-oiled machine of managing rentals, and then helping you buy in that market with a very seasoned operator in a very attractive market that is trending in the right direction. So She's not saying go do this on your own. Like, she's providing a platform in which helping you guide that. And if you're going to, I'm telling you, if you're going to experiment with single family rentals, I can tell you from experience, doing it on your own is not fun. And I also will agree, if it's not new, good luck. Because everything is going to have, you rip the roof off, you rip the water heater out, the appliances, there's no warranty. You could go on and on. Impossible if you're just doing it on your own.
Thank you. Thank you for saying that. I didn't want to self-promote, but that is what we do. We work with professional athletes who don't have no time, and people who live in another country, they can't do it. So we just hold your hand, make it easy for you.
Kathy, I really wanted to thank you for coming on to the show. We've been really generous with your time and appreciate you sharing your resources. How do people get in touch with you?
You can go to realwealth.com, real as in real estate and wealth as in your money, realwealth.com. And Retire Rich with Rentals is my book. You can get on Amazon. And of course, The Real Wealth Show is my podcast and the Real Estate News podcast as well.
Thank you so much, Kathy, for coming on and giving our listeners something to think about. And thank you to our listeners who have tuned in and to make this show possible. And we'll catch you on the next episode.
Thank you so much.